On today's episode of The Good Word, we break down the Celtics' loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. Or was it the Cleveland Cavaliers breaking the Celtics' streak and showing us some flaws that could haunt the Celtics later on this spring? And we talk about being fair to LeBron James, the father, and Bronny James, the son. All of that and producer John on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill. On Yahoo Sports, Ball Don't Lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcasts. It is Wednesday, which means it is a solo show with me and producer John. Producer John, I'm going to ask you first off, before I get into where I was last night, I want to get your thoughts on Kyrie and Luka going off and it meaning absolutely nothing last night, because Dallas just did not pack their defense at all.
I mean, this has been what the Dallas Mavericks have been doing for, I don't know, better part of 2 weeks. They've lost five out of their last six games. They have been embarrassed repeatedly. This is not like they're losing close games. They're losing by double digits, 20 plus. And it's, frankly, it's just hard to watch. You know, they had a seven-game win streak. Towards the beginning of that seven-game win streak, they traded for Gafford. They traded for PJ Washington. Gave up, I think, a first-round pick to get each one of them, as well as getting rid of Grant Williams. And the first-round pick they used to acquire him over the offseason. They gave up a ton of assets for this team. And the offense, running through Luka and Kyrie, looks great when those guys are shooting. But right. It seems like I heard someone, shout out to the Mavs Moneyball podcast, my buddies Josh and Kirk. But I heard them say that it reminded them of like the Steve Nash Phoenix Suns and how some teams would go into playing that 7 seconds or less offense going, hey, if Nash wants to score 40, 45, he can go off. But we're just going to make sure that no one else gets an open shot because we think that the rest of these guys can't score. Right. And that's what's going on with the Mavericks right now. Kyrie's going off every game. Luka's going off every game. The stats look great. No one else is doing a damn thing. And no one can play defense, specifically Kyrie and Luka, who need to be on the floor to make the offense work. Dudes are just running by them. Like, they're not even putting moves on them. They just run by them. Kyrie kind of specifically. Luka about half the time will try and like put a shoulder in someone's way.
Yeah.
But Kyrie just gets turned around. Like, I feel like I know I can't, but I feel like I could run by Kyrie watching how easily dudes just run by him and he doesn't even try to stop them. And it's not a recipe for success. And honestly, I'm not a big fan of their coach, so I don't know if he's going to be able to figure it out.
You're not a big fan of anybody over there. I get it. I get it, John. You like Luka.
That's not true. That's not true.
You love Luka. You love Luka.
Luka is a great basketball player. Kyrie is one of the most talented basketball players I have ever seen in my life. And watching him play basketball is honestly a joy on the offensive end. I think Derek Lively is great. I actually really do like PJ Washington. I think he's a good basketball player. And they have like really good depth. Like they have like nine good players. They just don't have enough guys that can score on their own without Luka or Kyrie like feeding them open shots. You know, the Derrick Jones Juniors of the world.
Yeah,
PJ Washington is kind of in that. So I like the players they have. I just think Jason Kidd is asking them to do things that they can't do well on the defensive end, and it's really killing them.
Well, in a way, I kind of understand what the formula is. Get those guys to defend, get those two guys to score, and maybe we can have lightning in a bottle. And you look at Luka's numbers, because I looked at them yesterday, just post All-Star break, he was like 37, 10, and 11. And then you juxtapose that with the Sunday afternoon game, against Philadelphia with no Joel Embiid, and they lose, I won't say handily, but it wasn't a last-second loss at the crib. They got beat by Philadelphia, just plain old Philadelphia. So, yeah, I'm with you. And I say that to say some games, whether it's in scoreboard or on streaks or games and streaks, that are just sort of inane. You know what I mean? Like, they just are big time anomalies. And you can write off a 5-game losing streak. You can write off a slow start after the All-Star break. And then there are just games like we saw last night. I made the trek to Cleveland, much to the chagrin of friends of mine, both in the business and out. They're like, why the hell are you going to Cleveland? Like, going to watch Cavs, Celtics. Like, it's not that bad, y'all. You know what I mean? Like, I get it.
Right?
But I watched that game. I was there last night. I was kind of working on two stories at once. So it's kind of this weird thing. But the immediate thing was the Celtics and their 11-game win streak getting snapped. And it did not look like that in early in the fourth quarter. You got to remember, Donovan Mitchell already out getting those PRP injections on his knee that basically puts him after the next three games, which the Cavs announced. I think they play Minnesota on Friday, and that would be game number three for him, which would basically put him right at the threshold for all NBA and MVP and all that type of stuff. And he knows it, and all that type of stuff is important to guys like that because he's having a hell of a year. But you could tell that he was lacking a little bit of explosiveness leading up into this. So I say all that to say, no Donovan Mitchell. Evan Mobley twisted his ankle on a dunk in the third quarter. So you're missing arguably your two most talented players. And then Jason Tatum gets his one field goal in the fourth quarter, John. His one field goal in the fourth quarter off of like a scramble, offensive rebound. He gets a reverse layup. He's chuckling on the other end. And at that point, you're like, okay, all the air is kind of going out of this arena, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. One of the loudest damn arenas in all of sports. Because they got the speakers right under you. Like, John, you literally cannot hear anything. I could probably at halftime hear Joey Chestnut eating whatever the hell he was eating in that contest. I felt like that was in my ear.
I saw that. I was going to ask you if you witnessed Joey Chestnut taking down, I think it was hot dogs. Was it not hot dogs?
It was something else. It wasn't hot dogs specifically. It was something else. Two Americas. Okay. Two Americas. I don't see how somebody like Joey Chestnut eat all them hot dogs or whatever it is and still be skinny. Teach me your ways, all right? Let me know what you do after you scarf down all those Franks, okay? So Joey Chestnut does his thing. The Kelseys are there, and boy, they are lit, okay? The Kelseys were LIT, right? They're from Cleveland. They're big Cavs fans. Jason Kelce announced his retirement from the Philadelphia Eagles. So they were just, they had bobblehead night. So it was really, really cool for them. And you just felt like the Celtics had a serious approach. The Celtics were the team that we had seen for the past month, except they hadn't played any close games. The Celtics did bombs over Baghdad with the Golden State Warriors. Okay, wait. Maybe I shouldn't say that. But I'm thinking of the Outkast song, John.
I know you're thinking of the Outkast song.
I just saw your face.
No, I was laughing because it was a good. I was imagining all those people running behind Andre in the music video, but they're actually Celtics and they're coming to destroy the Warriors. I get what you were at.
I did not want to alert the authorities or anything on a bad reference. That was not what I meant. But no. The Celtics took care of business on Sunday against Golden State and looked like they were taking care of business against this undermanned Cavs team. And being honest, had not really been, John, handling their business over the past week since they had started to get their full complement of players back before Donovan Mitchell went out with the knee injury. So you were just thinking, okay, this is the Celtics. They're gearing up for Denver. They got this game ahead. And boom, what happens? That Tiger didn't go crazy. That Tiger went Tiger. And by that, I mean the Celtics. And by that, I also mean Dean Wade. You don't know that reference, do you?
No.
Okay. So Chris Rock, when Chris Rock was a really good comedian, stand-up, and wasn't just living off of grievances, he was talking on a special. I want to say maybe it was Never Scared. So this is early 2000s. This is like 2003, 2004. And he was talking about Siegfried and Roy. And he said,
Now I remember this joke.
There you go. And then he said, y'all got mad at the tiger for the man sticking his head to tiger. That tiger didn't go crazy. That tiger went tiger. There you go. So the Celtics went Celtics last night. And I don't say that to make this lazy comparison, to say, here we go. The Celtics are who we thought they were. The Celtics are going to be the team that melts down when it really, really counts. Or maybe it's just a Tuesday night in Cleveland. You know what I mean? But I think the how they lost was really critical. And I think it's A, really impressive of Cleveland. Let me first start off by saying that, right? Because they seem to play better when they don't have a full complement of players. And I don't think it is a particular player problem. Like people would like to say, the Cavs are better without Donovan Mitchell, or the Cavs are better without Evan Mobley, or the Cavs are better without player here. It's not really any one player. It's kind of the way that they have to play that opens up space for Max Strus, that opens up space for George Niang, that opens up space for a guy like Dean Wade, who was perfect in the fourth quarter. And I literally mean perfect, John. He didn't miss a shot. I want to say he made 5 threes in the fourth quarter alone. He outscored the Boston Celtics by his damn self. Remember all the hullabaloo and all this other type of stuff we made about LeBron outscoring the Clippers by himself? This is Dean Wade. Not D Wade. Dean Wade. Okay? So, I want to say, John, really impressive from the Cavs because I don't want to short them. They are a top 3 seed in the Eastern Conference for a reason, and they've been dealing with injuries just like everybody else. And you're about an all-NBA player and a player who I thought was the future. I thought Evan Mobley was the absolute future. I don't think I'm necessarily wrong. Go ahead, John. What is it? What is it?
I almost sent you a text last night in like the first half, asking if you wanted to take back the Evan Mobley is Tim Duncan analysis that you made, I think, towards the end of last year. Because I was watching him. I was like, this dude is doing nothing. And now I know he can. And like in February, he was really good. But just in last night's game, before he went out with the ankle injury, which was unfortunate because he got a dunk and he probably could have got it going at that point. But I was watching him, like, his screens were bad. His passes were lazy. Like, his defense wasn't great. And I was like, this guy is giving him nothing. I actually think part of the reason that the offense, I mean, you explained it well, but part of the reason that the offense really took off in the fourth quarter was because he wasn't out there. And it's like, you're not going to pull Evan Mobley. He's too good to pull him. But if he's having a bad night and he leaves with an injury, sometimes that helps.
Well, here's the thing. The thing is, you probably need Evan Mobley to play center to be his most effective and honestly where he may develop to be. But right now, he's not, lack of a better phrase, he's not thick enough in the base to play center. Like he's skinny, he's long arms, so he can help that way. And you could see defensively, especially on help, where he's really adept in that way. But Tim Duncan was for all the things that we can say about Tim Duncan, he wasn't like Karl Malone chiseled, but you just couldn't move him. He was legit, whatever, 250. And it was a solid 250, and you weren't moving him. Like, he played against Kevin Garnett, who was slender, Rasheed Wallace, who wasn't built like that, a muscular Chris Webber, and not just held his own, but those dudes weren't moving him. Granted, this is a different NBA, different levels of development for kids who are coming up, where you're not teaching kids to play with their back to the basket and to get their bodies at such a place where they can handle that level of wear and tear. You're telling kids like Evan Mobley, Evan, you're going to have to start shooting the three. You're going to have to start playing with the ball in that way if you're going to get it. And that's where the development track sort of changes. Now, who knows if 17-year-old Tim Duncan hits the NBA sort of development track now compared to 1994, what it looks like. Duncan entered the league in 97. He was like 20 years old. He was actually a youngish rookie anyway because of coming from the Virgin Islands at 13 and everything else. Mobley right now would be a senior in high school. So while I'm not saying I'm selling my Evan Mobley stock, I'm simply saying I don't know if his body can get to the place where he can be an effective enough center where you don't need Jared Allen there. Jared Allen isn't a better player than Evan Mobley, but Jared Allen is a better center than Evan Mobley. So that helps with what Cleveland is going to do or what they're trying to do. And now you're putting Mobley out there in space to defend Jason Tatum when he was out there. But apparently Jason Tatum didn't really have a whole lot of big problems with Evan Mobley. He had big problems with everybody else. Because Jason Tatum, after that layup, he went 0-4 for the rest of the damn quarter. And those things happen. I'm not making a big stink out of it. Those things happen. I tell you, John, who did make a big stink out of it after Dean Wade got that tip dunk and Jason Tatum did his Book of Kobe fadeaway on Darius Garland. You tell me why you're doing a fadeaway on Darius Garland. Tell me why, John. Why the hell you 6'10 and Darius Garland is maybe 6'2? Maybe 6'2? I mean, he might be listed as 6'3, but he might be 6'2. Why you are doing a fadeaway as opposed to A, going earlier, and B, going to the basket. Make that make sense.
There's a third one, too. And this is, you said it right, he learned from Kobe. Kobe would do a fadeaway in that situation because Kobe was 4 inches shorter than Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum needs to get in the lab with Kevin Durant, who would understand, if I go up, I'm holding the ball high enough in my jump shot, Darius Garland's not going to get in the way of this. Darius Garland can't block this. Just go over him.
And not just that. It's almost like cue that Patrick Ewing when he was coaching Georgetown. Is that your shot? How often do you shoot that shot? Yes, he shoots the shot often. Jason Tatum shoots it often. We've seen him shoot it. But it seems like he's gone away from playing that way, which has actually worked to his advantage. Going to the basket a little bit more, working other parts of the floor. It just seems like, man, when the game clock is down to 10, he goes into Mamba mentality. And that ain't always good. And I don't know if that's something you have to fix in Jason Tatum. Like the fadeaway with the leg kick. At first, I was like, oh, that's a really poor call. And then the refs actually went back and reversed it, which I thought was actually pretty damn good. Zach Zarber, one of the best officials in the league, if not the best lead official in the league. He rightly determined that Jason Tatum's leg caused the contact with Darius Garland. Even though Garland was jumping into his space, if Jason Tatum's leg didn't extend, there wouldn't have been contact. You want to know how we know that? Because Jason Tatum's other leg didn't extend and Darius Garland didn't run into that one. And Tatum was saying after the game, I should have went earlier because KP had Kristaps Porzingis had a chance for a tip in. Yeah, John, that happens when you've got Darius Garland on you and the Cavs have to go send the second defender. That leaves someone open on the offensive glass, except you don't take the shot with half of a second left or whatever the hell it was. John, you're supposed to go early. You're taught now in today's basketball, unless it's a tie game. We win, we go home. We lose, we go to overtime. Like if it's a tie game, you bring it down 5-4, 3-2, 1, like you on the playground. But when you're down one, you try to give yourself as many opportunities as you can, especially if you miss, you play the free throw game. You got a timeout left. Now, if you got no timeouts left, I can go for that. I think they might have had a timeout left, but even Joe Mazzulla last night said, hey, I wish he would have went a little bit earlier, especially when you got 7'4" Porzingis out there and Jared Allen is the only tall guy out there and he's actually helping on the shot. So that leaves a bunch of small dudes to contend with Kristaps Porzingis, who's making his way to the front of the rim. I break all that down, John, to say it's not the end of the world. Jaylen Brown, who I alluded to earlier, he was not happy. And he wasn't happy with Jason Tatum. He wasn't happy with the way that the Celtics played in the last 8 or 9 minutes of the game, as he should not have been. And I don't know if you noticed, John, he's a serious chap. Jaylen Brown is not one much for the smiling. I can't say I've never seen him smile. I'm just going to say I ain't seen him smile much. Like he's serious, okay? So he was like, you know, these games matter. Today matters. And not just preparation for the playoffs, but we have to build good habits. And those are the things that you want to say. if you're Jaylen Brown. You also want to say that, John, for this other reason. You want to know what the other reason is, John?
I do.
You do? You know what the other reason is?
No, I said I want to know what the other reason
is. Oh, okay, gotcha. So the other reason for me is this. Jaylen Brown's massive extension kicks in next year. Right? The massive extension kicks in. The biggest contract in league history thing kicks in next year, which will be soon surpassed by Jason Tatum when he signs his, you know, massive extension, right? But the Celtics have changed a lot of players over the past 5 or 6 years. It looks like the same Celtics, but it's not. The same Celtics are just Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Everybody else has kind of been shuffled in and out. Porzingis is there. He wasn't there before. Marcus Smart was used to be the heart and soul. Grant Williams, who John mentioned earlier, went off to Dallas and now is with Charlotte. Like, they've traded players, shuffled guys in and out. Jrue Holiday's there, who's having a hell of a year, making a whole lot of sacrifices that we are not talking about right now because the Celtics are that good. At some point, I thought we were past the whole Jaylen, Jason conversation, but they can't afford to fall on their face like this with late game issues. Cause then that's going to bring up, okay, well, y'all, what more can we do here? And we all look at Jaylen Brown because Jaylen Brown has trouble with his left hand. And if you saw a clip, he had trouble with his right hand, you know, when he was palming the ball. And I forgot who the defender was. He was just looking at him like, hey, ref, you're not going to call? This is palming the basketball, like that type of stuff. So I say all that to say, John, this is not a panic for the Celtics. They were blowing teams out by 20-plus points a night. They blew the Warriors out by 50. Over the 10-game winning streak, it was one of the best point differentials for a 10-plus game winning streak in NBA history. We went over their numbers of net ratings and everything else. The one game does not matter as much to me. The how, that matters, because it brings up ghosts of Celtics past.
I want to ask you a quick question, and then we can hit the ad break. So you read Phil Jackson's book about like the last season that he was coaching Kobe and all. I think he came back, but you read Phil Jackson's book about coaching the Lakers, right?
I don't think I did.
So it was a good book. And it was one part that has always stuck with me where he was explaining, like, at what point in the game does he as a coach feel comfortable with a lead, that the lead is going to turn into a win? And he said, we need to be up by double digits at home in the fourth quarter. And to me, and granted, I was watching mostly the Mavericks game by the time this game was in the fourth quarter, but I went back and I rewatched the fourth quarter, and it felt like to me the Celtics were up, what, 20 with like 9 minutes left?
23, the biggest comeback in the league, yeah.
23 with 9 minutes left. And it felt like to me the Celtics, and specifically like Tatum and Brown, were just kind of like, all right, we got this now. Like, Mobley's out, Mitchell's out, they don't have anything left. We got the 23-point lead. There's 9 minutes left. We can let our foot up off the gas. To me, last night was an example of just how good NBA players are, just how good NBA teams are. That, like, you let up off the gas, it almost doesn't matter how big your lead is and how much time is left, unless it's like a minute left and you're up by like 20. Because people can shoot threes, they can get hot, crowd gets going, boom, yep. Next thing you know, winning streak is over. So to me, this wasn't like, oh, Tatum's shot selection or Brown's handles or them panicking or whatever. I'm sure there's part of that. To me, this was a simple, they thought they had it, they let go of the rope, and they had no way of getting it back.
Yeah, and I think the thing that people, once you start powering down, it's really hard. It's almost like an old computer. Y'all remember old computers? Them fat back desktops that you used to have that used to take up like an entire space somewhere, like an entire marble dining room table. You know what I mean? The whole, John, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Of course, but we're dating ourselves.
That's fine. Look, hey, it is what it is. Once you start powering that computer down and you just start, oh my God, I forgot to open a Microsoft Word again. Baby, you waiting 10 minutes. You waiting on that thing to power down, and you just gonna have to sit and wait. and you ain't sitting and waiting with no cell phone because we ain't had those back then. Or here's a better one. You are making a CD on your fat back computer. You are making a blank CD on a from not from a playlist. You are going from like Aries or what was the green one? LimeWire. It's another one. What's another one, John?
Napster.
You're making something from one of them and you forget a song. But John, you've already started burning the CD. Baby, guess what? That CD is done. You're gonna have to make another one. You gonna have to find you another blank CD. Hey, slow jam mixes 15. Too bad, baby.
Yeah, now we're super dating ourselves. I almost said like, yeah, it's not cassette tapes. You can't tape right over it. And I was like, those don't exist anymore.
Hey, I do live in the big boombox era where you definitely had to put the tape over the little piece of part. I'm trying to figure out, I don't know how we discovered this. Like, John, you asked me about the phrase, where did quietest kept come from? And like, black vernacular. I have no clue where it actually came from. I also don't know who got the bright idea to put tape over a cassette and that meant that you could record over it. Who's the genius? Because that doesn't come in an instruction manual somewhere. We didn't get that from the Google machine because Google didn't exist back then. Somehow we gained this institutional knowledge, quiet as kept, but I don't know how. I don't know how, John. So basically going back to the Celtics, they start burning that CD and they realized, oh, we missed a couple songs. That Dean Wade song, that song playing, baby. And I'll tell you this. And seriously, I'll tell you this part. And off the Celtics to the Cavs. The Cavs very well could have lost that game because of shoddy late game execution. Like, Darius Garland was making some wild passes. He's usually a lot more sure-handed with the ball. They didn't really get into their sets late. They need to make sure when Donovan Mitchell comes back that he has his hands on the ball at all times late. Even if guys do a lot of standing around and all that, and that's been a criticism of that, you put him with Dean Wade and you put him with some of those glue guys on the floor and you figure out which big you're going to play, now you've got something. Now you've got an element of toughness that people were questioning last year against the rough and tumble New York Knicks. They still got that tough defense, even having a small backcourt because you got Mobley and Allen on the back end. But if you got Donovan Mitchell with the ball in his hands in the last 4 or 5 minutes, you can feel reasonably comfortable with the type of shot you're going to get. That's pretty much that's it. But now we're going to go to the ad break because last night was a fantastic game. And if you're asking John what city he'd rather be in, if it's Cleveland or Boston, you'd probably say Cleveland. Welcome back to The Good Word. We are not going to be talking about the Celtics not being deep enough or their bad shot selection, not getting great shots in the fourth quarter or anything like that. We kind of talked about that earlier. Maybe I didn't touch on the Celtics not getting great shots last night. That's not just the Jason Tatum thing. That was a Celtics thing. But let's move on. Bronny James probably won't play in the NCAA tournament because the USC Trojans are not that good. And I think, if nothing else, we would have had a chance to fall in love with the Trojans as a team, even if they won a game, even if they give us just 36 hours of bliss that is completely unrealistic. Our obsession with the NCAA tournament and our obsession with March Madness would have allowed us to possibly fall in love with players on that team, specifically Bronny, especially if he had a breakout game. And it was something that Gilbert Arenas said on his podcast not too long ago. I think he had Bomani on. And he talked about, and Bo asked him, okay, maybe should have Bo on for this. But Bo asked him, is Bronny James an NBA player? And Gilbert brought up a comparable player, a guy that he thinks really is a player. And he said he was training them together. And he said, Gilbert was like, so you just going to let this guy just dominate you? You're not going to do anything? And he said Bronny just went to a different gear. And he was like, when Bronny goes to that gear, when he, you know, when he presses this, that S button, if y'all watched last week's show, when you press that S button, he can go, right? But I wonder if that S button isn't your automatic setting. What type of NBA player are you if you're not already blessed with so many other physical supreme gifts? Like 6'3 is tall. It's life tall, especially seeing the Kelseys. The Kelseys are not tall, John. One of them is listed at 6'5, and there's no way in black math that that is 6'5, okay? No way. No way that that's 6'5. I forgot which one they said, but them dudes didn't look too much taller than me. And when they walk by me, I'm like, they don't look tall at all. NBA players, you recognize they're tall. You, all of them are taller than you think. Every last one of them taller than you think. NFL guys, not so much, but I digress. 6'3 is not, it's not great size. It's just good enough size. You know what I'm saying? It's good enough size because you won't be able to play switchable defense the way that maybe you could at 6'5 where you can play, if you're a point guard, you can play down the small forward defensively. You can get caught on some screens and you can still be tough enough to play defensively, like that sort of thing. And I'm not saying Bronny's not an NBA player. I'm just saying we are entering a part, John, where I think KP says that the Lakers have the 56th pick, which is a second rounder on that second day of the draft. Now it's a two-day thing. And you're wondering if the Lakers are going to seriously explore taking Bronny there. Remember, Rich Paul spoke to Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN when LeBron was crossing the 40,000 mark and was just saying, you know, we're just going to see how the season plays out with Bronny, you know, how he finishes, how he's going to explore or whatever. It wasn't any declaration. You know what I mean? It was just something that says no decision has been made yet. And John, I just feel like he's in a really unfair place. And to be perfectly honest, LeBron is in an unfair place. And people have said to me multiple times, especially on Twitter that they believe that I'm unfair to LeBron. I'm going to stick up for LeBron here on this one. If you have a son who carries your name and he wants to be an NBA player, or he shows that he has some of the gifts and everything else, you're going to put all your resources into giving him every advantage to hope that he succeeds. And it would be very unfair if you didn't mention that kid. It would be very unfair because people would take your lead. And if you're not bigging up your child, nobody else is going to. If you're not telling us that your child is the next best thing, or you're not telling us that your child isn't a future NBA player, then we're not going to believe it. You're LeBron James. Now, there's the other side to that. When LeBron said, you know, my son could play in the NBA right now, and I want to play with my son and stuff like that. You want to do the Ken Griffey Jr. senior thing and have that moment. I totally get it. That's where things get a little murky. But just from the standpoint of being a parent and wanting to encourage your child to follow his dreams, if they are his dreams, I can't bag on LeBron for that or Bronny for following him.
I have a theory, and my theory ends with a happy ending. I'm going to take you back to a few weeks ago when it got leaked that the Warriors had inquired about LeBron James' availability on the trade market. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers reached out to Rich Paul and LeBron and were basically like, let us know. And I heard that described as the Lakers treat their star players better than any other franchise, specifically NBA franchise. And this was an example of that. They could have just hung up the phone on the Warriors. And then they were like, no, if LeBron wants to go to Golden State, we'll figure that out for him. Let's figure out if he wants to go to Golden State. So do I think the Lakers would use the 56th pick in the draft to get Bronny James if that's what LeBron wanted? Yes, I do, because the Lakers have a reputation for doing what the stars want, making the stars the most happy. Now, in addition to that, after LeBron and Rich Paul came out and said, LeBron doesn't want to go to the Warriors, LeBron wants to be a Laker, LeBron has said several times since then, I want to finish my career with the Lakers. I don't know how many years I have left. Hopefully they're with the Lakers. And right around that time, it was Bronny James is not going to enter the draft based on where he'll be drafted. It is based on which teams show interest in him. I think this is actually going to work out in a somewhat manipulative fashion, where I think there's going to be a kind of agreement here that the Lakers are going to draft Bronny James, and Bronny James is going to tell the other teams, don't worry about me. I'm not interested in your team. Because I don't think LeBron James Jr. and LeBron James Sr. are going to go play for the Washington Wizards next year just to be on the same team. Like, yes, he wants to play with his son, but he doesn't want to lose games with his son. And he would love it to be in LA where the rest of the family is, where his friends is, where he knows the Lakers are going to support him and his son in a way that other franchises may not. So I think the happy ending here is I do think Bronny James becomes the 56th pick in the draft, and I do think he goes to the Lakers, and I think all of it is kind of masterminded by his father, which is fine. As a father, I would do the same.
And I get, and I was going to get to that. I am not a parent, right? But I got like my god kids and my nephews, and I would do anything for those rascals. And they don't have, they don't even like technically share my DNA like my nephew does. One of my nephews does, but my other nephew, he's just like, he's like a god nephew in a way. And I'd do anything for them chumps. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just my get down. Like if I love you, I love you. All that type of stuff, right? But can you imagine for a second? Can you imagine LeBron going to the Washington Wizards and playing with that franchise? And you know how grumpy LeBron gets when LeBron's team start losing? And then the fact, you know, I'm only here because of your ass. Like, can you imagine how LeBron would look at his son? He'd be shooting them subliminal, the subliminal IG messages where it's LeBron and the team in a team photo somewhere, but Bronny ain't in it. Talking about they'll be trying to fit out, fit in, and all this other type of stuff. That would be a reality show of the highest order, right? I'm just playing, y'all. I really don't mean it. I wouldn't wish the Washington Wizards on anybody, okay? I really wouldn't. They ain't even, once again, they ain't won 50 games since Michael Jackson put out Off the Wall, all right? And they literally have not. I promise y'all, that's not a joke. They haven't won 50 games since Michael Jackson put out Off the Wall. And Off the Wall happened in the 70s, okay? All right, cool. But since we got that out the way, KP does have a story on yahoosports.com. Don't forget to check that out on the website and on the app. It is that time of the show where producer John and I tell you about games of the week. I just left from Cleveland, and I'm back home. I took a really early flight to get here and make this podcast for y'all. So we got games. Today is Wednesday. I think I know where John is going to go. So go ahead, John, with your first one.
I mean, you heard me at the beginning of the show. The Mavericks have lost 5 of 6. They are in desperate need of a win. And here come the Miami Heat, who have won 11 of their last 14 games. And when they won last night, they still didn't have Kevin Love, DeLon Wright. There was someone else from their rotation. It was like 4 rotation players.
Was Hero
injured right now. I think there was 4 rotation players that were out last night. It didn't matter.
Josh Richardson. I think Josh is out for the season.
And Josh is out too. Now, granted, they were playing the Detroit Pistons. No shade, but understanding. But that's not the team I would want coming in if I needed a win real bad. And the Dallas Mavericks need a win real bad. And when their defense is all messed up, the one coach I would not want to play against is Eric Spoelstra. So it's a really, really important game for the Mavericks. And based on how things went from this point on last year for the Mavericks, where they just went into a total tailspin, ended up tanking their way out of the play-in so that they could get the draft pick. It worked out. They got Derek Lively. I forgot to say this earlier. One of the main issues they're having right now is that they can't seem to play Derek Lively more than like 18 minutes a game, and no one knows why. He might be on a minutes restriction because he broke his nose a few weeks ago. He might not be. They might just be limiting his minutes to try and keep him fresh for a playoff run. I don't know. But he is their third best player, and he's playing 15 to 18 minutes a game, and it's really hurting them. So I'm going to be watching this to see if Lively plays more, if that helps the defense, if anything can help the defense. Jason Kidd has really just fallen into this bad habit of the defense looks bad, so we switch to zone, and zone doesn't do anything except give up open three-point shots. So I'm watching the Heat and Mavericks tomorrow night. What are you watching?
I'm watching the Celtics again. And I'm watching them against the champs. And it's interesting that both teams, we kind of alluded to a little bit earlier about both teams perhaps looking ahead, although Denver, I don't think, was looking ahead to Boston, because you can't, you ain't, if you're looking ahead and you're playing against Kevin Durant, that's your fault. You get what you get. And they were playing Phoenix last night, and Kevin Durant had a terrible fourth quarter, and then Kevin Durant did not have a terrible fourth quarter. Step back, pull. Overtime, pull. Overtime, pull. And next thing you know, Denver's home winning streak went up in smoke. And we just saw, we all knew what happened to Boston last night. So both teams are going to try to get on track. It was a could have been finals matchup last year. In some people's minds, it is a probable finals matchup this year. John knows how I feel about a probable Denver-Boston NBA Finals matchup. It is a phrase that I will not say again here. But I do think from a basketball standpoint, Thursday is going to be a really good game, because you're going to have two really good teams at reasonable, close to full strength. Boston's going to be trying to make amends. Both teams are on national TV. Both teams want the national TV attention. I'm sure they don't like it when all we talk about is Lakers and Warriors. So I do think that will be a good game on Thursday night. I believe that is a TNT game. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all we have for you on today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. And we will be back here on Monday for another episode of The Good Word. And I think we're going to have a pretty cool guest for y'all. Until then, everybody be safe.